We greet our friends everywhere with Chapter 15 of Frank Was Always a Lady, the story of Frances Willard. This is another in the series Stories of Great Christians and is brought to you by the Moody Bible Institute of Chicago. Frank Willard tried 13 years of school teaching. She said she was tied to a bell rope and she hated every year of it. Her last experience was her worst. As president of Evanston College for Ladies, she battled with her former fiancé, President Fowler of Northwestern University, and finally, at a trustees meeting, resigned. She vowed she would never teach again, but for months, she groped for the way God wanted to use her. She was so very sure he did. Intrigued by the intelligent women who were crusading around the country against saloons and liquor, she went east to find out more about the temperance movement. In the east, she was offered a job as principal of an exclusive New York City girls' school and a job as president of a practically penniless Chicago temperance union. She made up her mind in a hurry and started back to the Midwest.
Frank, everybody will want to shake the new president's hand. He'll be here all night. Come on to the other room with me. I want to talk to you.
Be glad to, Louise. My hand's getting tired already.
Oh, that's better. You can't blame the women. They're so excited. When I wrote you, well, we didn't expect you'd say yes to us. Now that you're here, duly elected, ready to work.
I'm a little surprised myself, Louise. Your letter took a lot of sober thinking and praying.
I deliberately didn't put us in the best light. I didn't want to raise your hopes. Frank, in my letter, I said something about our lack of money. Now, I don't want this to worry you.
Louise, it won't. If it would have, I couldn't have taken the job.
Well, this is what I meant when I wrote, we don't have any money now, but if you'll say what you expect for salary, we'll try to raise it.
Why, Louise, you mean...
I can't guarantee a thing, but we'll try.
Oh. That'll be all right.
Bless you. We'll try hard.
I mean, Louise, I don't expect any salary at all. When I took this job, well, I told God I'd depend on another to provide the income.
Do you mean that?
Yes, I do.
Frank, when the women hear this, they won't be able to do enough for you. Oh, what a relief. I'm always timid about budgets and money. I was afraid we'd get involved over our heads. But I didn't dare hope. We knew you had friends, that they'd taken you to Europe, but I didn't dare hope that they, too, would see the vision.
But, Louise...
Oh, Frank, thank them for us, won't you?
Yes, but...
Now, we don't have to worry about you at all.
That's right, Louise. Don't worry about me at all. Now, Oliver, I know what you think about women in your city room, but it seemed to me the editor could break his own rules once in a while.
It might be different, Frank, if you came smelling of spring violets and bearing good news. But, sis, you've just laid a great big bouquet of funeral lilies on my desk. And it's piled high enough with bad news as it is.
Don't talk like you're writing a bad editorial, Oliver.
You've got it wrong, sis. I wouldn't use lilies in an editorial. That's the Methodist minister in me coming out. You affect me that way.
Oliver.
You didn't come in here to tell me for the 100th time you're sorry I ever left the ministry. Or did you?
No, you know why I'm here. I've already explained, and if it's bad news that your sister is on the verge of doing something important and needed at last...
Now, if it had an important paycheck attached...
But, Oliver, can't you see? It's a bigger challenge this way. I've thrown myself on God for everything.
Well, that's all very noble, sis, but not awfully practical.
I know it isn't, Oliver. That's where you come in.
That's what I mean by bad news. You want me to take care of Mother.
Yes, I do. I can get along myself. There'll be gifts and collections and honorariums for speaking. But it's Mother. It's the regular bills.
Mm-hmm. Have you conveniently forgotten that you have 6 nieces and nephews, all my offspring and all depending on me for breakfast, lunch, and dinner?
This would be temporary.
Huh.
God will provide. He's promised, Oliver. I'm doing his will. I'm so sure of it. I heard his promise as clearly as if he'd been speaking to me.
There's another name for that. Hallucinations. Are you sure you haven't been hitting the bottle, sis?
Oliver, I won't sit here and let you laugh at Temperance.
No, you won't. But you will let me pay the bills to make up for Temperance's mistakes, won't you? Sit down, sis. Now, don't get emotional. You know, in spite of your brains, you act an awful lot like all of the other women I ever knew. Yeah, I'll take care of Mother for you.
Oh, Oliver, thank you. You won't be sorry.
No, I won't be, because I think a lot of Mother, even if I can't stomach this Temperance mess you and she have got yourselves mixed up with. Cheer up, sis. Don't take me too seriously. You'll be all right.
Yes, I can always count on you. Remember the time you drove Mary and me to school the first day back in Wisconsin?
As I remember, you got pretty mad because I didn't start out before breakfast.
But you got us there on time. That's what I remember, Oliver. I know I can always count on you.
There you are, Miss Willard. We didn't know how much longer to wait.
I'm sorry. I didn't realize it would take an hour to walk from State Street.
Walk? What a foolish thing to do. Why, the new trolleys are so convenient now.
And expensive. Well, I'm here anyway. Let's start the meeting.
But Mrs. Willard, ma'am, we're bound to get more snow yet. Who's going to shovel if you let me go?
I doubt if we have more heavy snow this year, James. I can sweep down light snow myself.
Besides, what about them pesky ashes? Can't manage them.
James, I will manage. I've made up my mind that an able-bodied woman like me doesn't need as much help around the house. Maybe next summer when the lawns... We'll see then, James.
Frank, I'm glad you've stopped in at the paper today. I've been wanting to say this for a month. You tell me living from hand to mouth like you're doing is enlarging your sympathy for the penniless. Well, I say your faith method is a pretty rude challenge to the Almighty. Why, well, you put a chip on your shoulder, and you've dared the omnipotence to knock it off.
I didn't come here for a lecture, Oliver. I brought a Temperance news release. I hope your prejudices won't stop your paper from announcing our 3:00 meeting.
For 3 months, Frank lived by faith. Someone paid her $3 for a lecture here. Tomorrow's mail brought a free railway pass. Next week's lecture would give her $10, or maybe nothing at all. But lecturing one night in Freeport, Illinois, she collapsed. It was inflammatory rheumatism. She retreated quietly home to Rest Cottage in Evanston.
Oh, it's my shoulder.
What's that, dear? Your shoulder? Does your shoulder ache now?
No, Mother, I said it must be the chip Oliver was talking about. It's heavy today.
What's that, dear?
Nothing, Mother, nothing. You wouldn't understand. Could I have another glass of water, please? Thanks.
Frank, I can't keep still any longer. I want you to listen to me. You brought this on yourself.
Mother, please, I'll be all right. It's just a little rheumatism.
Maybe you'll be all right this time, but what about the next time? I believe in faith as much as you, but you've flown in the face of Providence.
Oliver's been talking to you.
I don't often listen to Oliver, and you know it. No, Frank. Those good women spoke to you about salary the day they elected you as president, didn't they?
Yes, but I...
That was your heavenly father's provision. And you turned away from it and dictated to him the method of his care.
Now, Mother...
Now, Frank, I've lived a good many more years than you. God isn't going to start loaves of bread flying down the chimney or set the fire going in my stove without fuel. You're out at the elbows, down at the heels, and down sick besides. Now, I want you to write those temperance ladies a plain statement of fact.
But, Mother, they don't have the money.
They said they'd get it. They will. They should. I'll get the stationery. Will you write, or will I?
I will. Well, there goes Oliver's chip. I wonder if my shoulder will feel better now.
Frank didn't want to write the letter, but she knew she should. To her surprise, by return mail came a check for $100. From that day, she collected a specified salary regularly. That year, at Bloomington, Illinois, local groups solidified into statewide organizations. And in August, women from 17 statewide groups rallied themselves right into the National Women's Christian Temperance Union. Who wrote the Declaration of Principles? Frank. Who was nominated for national president? Frank. And declining that, she was promptly elected national secretary. A woman from Pennsylvania named Annie Wittenmeyer was elected president.
And Mrs. Wittenmeyer will make a good one, Mother. She's an older woman. About your age, I suppose.
Oh, thank you.
I didn't say old. I just said older. Lots of experience and smart, like you. Oh, Mother, it's good to be home again for a while, right in my own living room.
And it's good to have you. Take another cookie. And go on about the convention.
All right, well, we voted in our Declaration of Principles. I told you that. That comes out for equal rights and responsibilities for men and women. A living wage, an eight-hour day.
You're all pretty daring.
And total abstinence. And, of course, a pledge to use everything legitimate to fight the liquor traffic. Mother, women did that. That's what I can hardly believe. So many smart women, all doing something.
I think you were wise, Frank, in turning down the presidency. Let the old women do the steering.
And, oh, Mother, something happened on the way home. I stopped in Columbus, you know.
Yes.
And one Sunday morning, before church, I was praying. And, Mother, it was almost as if I heard a voice from God again. Now, don't look like that. This voice, and I almost heard it, said, "You are to speak for the women's ballot,
Frank."
Now, wait. The women's ballot is a weapon of protection to the home and loved ones from the tyranny of drink. That's what I heard.
Now, Frank, the women's ballot is radical. You know very well why temperance has gone as far as it has. The women who are with it are always ladies.
That doesn't mean ladies can't support the ballot.
No hatchets, no politics. Oh, please, Frank, don't you wander away.
Mother, I told you, I heard a voice. God told me. I've made up my mind.
To what?
There are going to be politics in temperance from now on. How are women going to fight liquor if they can't vote against it?
But you're too young to agitate.
I won't do anything foolish. But I'm writing to Mrs. Wittenmeyer today.
I don't think you should.
To tell her I want to talk at our next convention. I want to speak. I have to speak about getting the vote for women.
Robert, this is an outrageous letter.
Yeah? What's that, Annie?
That young woman from Chicago wants to inveigle our temperance ladies into politics. It's outrageous. It can't be done.
Oh, I told you, Annie, not to get involved in temperance. I warned you couldn't always count on having nice women in the group. Get a few of the wrong kind and they'll get out of hand.
No, they won't. I'm still president. She can't stir up any trouble. Nobody knows her. I fancy she's just young and inexperienced. I'll write her and tell her a firm no, and that'll be the end of it.
And so we conclude chapter 15 of Frank Was Always a Lady, the story of Frances Willard. This is another in the series Stories of Great Christians, which come to you transcribed from the Moody Bible Institute in Chicago.